Hello, everyone. I hope you're having a great Sunday. My name is Dr. Jason Uchida. I'm a doctor of naturopathic medicine and your host of this program on alternative medicine. Welcome to the August 5th, 2007 edition of Wellness in the New Millennium. Thank you for joining me tonight. We have one of those can't-miss programs lined up for you as we have a very special guest joining us, Jeffrey Smith, the author of the international best-selling book, Seeds of Deception, joins us in just a few minutes. Jeffrey Smith is an expert on the industry of genetic engineering of foods. Stay with us to learn about the good, the bad, and the ugly that genetic engineering of foods is ushering into our small global village. Tune in to learn about the childlike knowledge our expert geneticists currently have about genetic engineering and the potential catastrophes that awaits us as certain giant chemical companies hastily dive into this unknown abyss in search of billion-dollar bonanzas. Jeffrey Smith will be speaking about some of the ways genetic engineering has been used on some of the more common foods we eat, how genes are spliced into these foods, what genes are being rearranged, why these connection points are unstable and prone to failure and give rise to further unwanted mutations, what problems genetic engineering has caused today, and the potential devastation it may cause to humankind in the future. Before we go any further, let me tell you about the upcoming topics of the next few weeks. Next week is a Don't Miss program. Dr. Shara Ann DeVita will be joining us to share her expertise about the types of toxic chemicals that are typically added into skincare products and how they affect our health, and why she puts only natural and organic ingredients in DeVita Natural Skincare products. Then on August 26th, retired urologist Dr. Thomas Ito will be joining us again. Dr. Ito believes that the medicine of the future is naturopathic medicine. Tune in to hear why he believes this and learn about what you can do to be a part of the medicine of the future. Again, next week, how to keep your skin supple, soft, and ageless with Dr. Cheryl Ann DeVita. Wellness in the New Millennium is brought to you by the leaders in the health, wellness, and alternative medicine industry, the Tri-Element Supplement Company, Nature Science Integrity. Nutrix Hawaii produces the bioastin, the natural astaxanthin, and organic spirulina pacifica in powder, crystal flakes, and tablets since 1983. DeVita Natural Skin Care, engineered by nature and formulated by science for healthy, vibrant skin. The Pan American MOA Foundation, promoting true health through art and beauty, nature farming, and jodei, the medical art from Japan. Enzymatic Therapy, producing innovative quality supplements for your healthcare needs. The Flora Supplement Company, producers of liquid phytocapsules and quality nutritional supplements for a healthy digestive tract, bone health, and detoxification. The Good Health Food Store, more than just a health store. And the Island Wellness Center, the chronic illness specialist, author of the international best-selling book, Seeds of Deception, Jeffrey Smith. And I will be right back after we take this very important sponsorship break with our friends from the Pan American MOA Foundation, Enzymatic Therapy, and the Flora Supplement Company.
You're listening to Dr. Jason Uchida of the Island Wellness Center. Dr. Uchida is trained and licensed as a naturopathic physician and has been in private practice since 1988. Naturopathic physicians are the only doctors who are medically trained in the use of herbs, vitamins, and minerals. Dr. Uchida is currently a member on the State of Hawaii Board of Examiners in Naturopathic Medicine. You may direct appropriate letters and phone calls to his office at 615 Pi'ikoi Street, Suite 1114, Honolulu, Hawaii 96814, or phone 589-1955. That's 589-1955. You may also email Dr. Uchida at wellness@pbchawaii.com.
This is KWAI Honolulu 1080 on the AM dial.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Jason Uchida, and you're listening to Wellness in the New Millennium on K108. Tonight, we have a very special guest joining us. Jeffrey Smith is an expert on the industry of genetic engineering of foods and the author of the international best-selling book, Seeds of Deception, Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of the Genetically Engineered Foods You're Eating. Here are a couple of reviews of the Seeds of Deception. Jim Diamond, medical doctor, chairman of the Sierra Club Genetic Engineering Committee, says, to get up to speed on the subject of genetically modified foods, there is no better book than Seeds of Deception. Jeffrey Smith deals with the science as well as the deception in a pleasing, sure-footed way. Samuel S. Epstein, medical doctor, professor emeritus, environmental and occupational medicine, University of Illinois at Chicago School of Public Health, and chairman of the Cancer Prevention Coalition, says, I have seen firsthand how Monsanto and the FDA have resorted to scientific deceit of the highest order to market genetically engineered milk. With captivating style and a flair for describing science in clear, accurate language, Seeds of Deception unveils the distortions, omissions, and lies for all to see. It is a powerful antidote to this global charade. Jeffrey Smith, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for joining us at midnight, your time, Iowa.
Thank you. Yes, it's midnight here.
Yeah, how are you doing? You all right?
Yes, I'm fine.
All right. Jeff, I have to say that we've been trying to get you on this program for about the last 10 months, but due to your book tour and your many speaking engagements, we finally have you on the program. How's the book selling for you?
Well, I live on book sales and speaker fees right now, and so I get to be a full-time volunteer at the Institute for Responsible Technology as its executive director. My new book, Genetic Roulette, which just came out in April, is being received by people as a very exciting tool to convey the evidence of health risks. I worked with more than 30 scientists over the last 2 years gathering all the known health risks of genetically engineered foods and putting it into easy-to-read two-page spreads with an executive summary on the left side for the ADD politician and detailed cited text on the right for the researcher and staff. So It's being used and distributed around the world. Groups around the world are contacting me to reproduce it in their language or in their country because they believe that when distributed in the right hands, it will end the genetic engineering of the food supply.
Man, you are a busy man. What was the name of your more recent book, Jeff?
It's Genetic Roulette.
Roulette. All right. We're actually going to be talking about your book, Seeds of Deception, though, tonight.
No problem.
Jeff, I was literally glued to my chair when I was reading your book. It reads very much like a $100 million blockbuster cloak and dagger type thriller movie. It's stuffed with legal documents exposing the big chemical industry and federal government officials for falsifying research data, paying off government officials for preferential treatment and changing of the rules, regulations, and laws. Jeff, about 90% of the population believes that genetically engineered foods doesn't involve them or their families. Can you tell us why we should all care about genetically engineered foods?
Well, the genetically engineered foods, which are foods where genes from bacteria, viruses, and other sources have been forced into the DNA of crops like soy, corn, cotton, and canola, it causes massive collateral damage to the DNA, which can cause changes in allergies, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems. These were actually warnings by the FDA scientists that it could create these problems. They had urged their superiors to require long-term safety studies, but the person in charge of policy at the FDA, Michael Taylor, was Monsanto's former attorney and later their vice president. Mm. And he ignored the warnings of the scientists and said, if Monsanto and others want to introduce these crops, they don't even have to tell the FDA, they can put it onto the market. Mm. Now, 10 years after they've been on the market, we could see thousands of sick, sterile, and dead animals, thousands of toxic and allergic-type reactions linked to GM crops, and damage in virtually every system tested in laboratory animals.
Jeff, you mentioned a few foods earlier that are genetically modified. Can you tell the listening audience which foods are commonly genetically modified that we eat today and about the percentage?
There's four majors. There's soy, about 89% of the soy in the United States. Corn, about 61%, cotton, about 83%, and canola, about three-quarters. Mm. Now, there's three minor crops, although I say that all over the world, three minor crops, but one of them is not minor in Hawaii. It's papaya. Most of the papaya in Hawaii is genetically engineered not to die from a ring spot virus. And then there's also a little bit of zucchini and crookneck squash, probably grown more in the south United States. I'm not sure if any is grown in Hawaii.
Mm. I don't think so, not zucchini. Jeff, most people believe that what's to worry about genetic engineering? The scientists insert a gene with perfect precision. Connection point is rock solid, and the scientists know exactly what they just created. Is that perception correct?
No, that perception is completely wrong. In fact, they load a gene gun with genes and blast it into the DNA of a cell. They don't know where it ends up. It could destroy genes, end up inside genes, delete genes, cause scrambling of mutations up and down the DNA. Then they take the transformed cell and they clone it using tissue culture, which can create hundreds or thousands of mutations in the DNA, so that in some cases it's 2 to 4% different than the parent cell. So that's huge. That's huge numbers of changes in the genetic code. And they don't actually do much testing to see if the DNA or RNA or proteins or natural compounds in the plant have changed dramatically. They don't do long-term feeding studies. However, the studies that have been done have been showing shocking evidence of problems, including death, sterility, changes in the structure and function of organs, enzyme levels, etc.
Do the scientists know what's causing death or sterility or diseases from these genetically engineered foods? What's going wrong with the gene splicing?
Typically, as you alluded to in the description of the book, when there's a scientist that finds adverse reactions, he's fired or stripped of responsibilities or denied further money or denied tenure. The evidence is often ignored or denied or distorted. So the follow-up, which should be done when you find these adverse reactions, is typically not done. Now, we have a pretty good idea in some cases by putting a lot of evidence together. For example, the corn and cotton that's currently genetically engineered, some of it is engineered to produce its own pesticide. And the pesticide is called BT toxin. It's used in organic agriculture. It's used in forestry. Now, it has a history of problems. When they were spraying it in the Pacific Northwest, about 500 people complained of allergic-type reactions. This was being sprayed for gypsy moth infestation. People had to go to the hospital. Very serious allergic-type reactions. Now the farm workers that are handling the cotton that's genetically engineered with the gene from the bacteria to create this BT toxin, they're complaining of the exact same allergic-type symptoms that the people who are sprayed with the BT toxin are complaining of. And they're complaining just by picking the cotton or leaning against it or loading it onto trucks. And then they let the sheep herders allow their sheep to graze on the BT cotton plants after harvest. Within 5 to 7 days, 1 out of 4 of the sheep die, about 10,000 sheep in total.
Wow, wow.
And I also know several farmers out of about 24 total who we recorded complained that thousands of their pigs became sterile when they fed them certain varieties of genetically modified corn. Also in the Philippines, people living next to a cornfield that was producing this BT toxin, during the time of pollination, this mysterious disease started progressing from those living closest to the cornfield to those furthest away. And then the following year, when they planted the same seeds in 4 more villages, also during the time of pollination, people complained of the same mysterious symptoms. And there's also farmers that complained of deaths among cows, horses, water buffaloes, and chickens, also linked to these genetically modified pesticide-producing corn.
Wow. Jeffrey, did you say that the scientists actually use a gun to blast the DNA?
That's right. It used to be like a 20 caliber gun, but now 22 caliber gun. Now they actually have a system where they put it in and shoots it in. It's a ballistic, a biolistics method. And this particle bombardment, they coat tungsten or gold with these genes. And they have a gene. They have an on switch called a promoter, and they have an end switch called a NOS terminator. And that tells the DNA mechanism, start reading now, start reading here and stop reading there. And the promoter turns it on 24/7 around the clock so that it's always producing this toxin or whatever it's producing. Now, the promoter which turns on this transgene which is inserted might also turn on native genes within the DNA. So it could turn on an allergen or a toxin or a carcinogen or an anti-nutrient. It's like a genetic roulette. We're just throwing a dart somewhere into the DNA, damaging some genes, turning some genes off permanently, turning some genes on permanently, and causing others to be scrambled and change in function. And so we also find that with the genetically engineered soybeans, when they actually looked at what was being created by the DNA, which is RNA, it was totally different than what was expected. And this is a problem because these genetic inserts may not be stable. They found that in 5 different genetically modified crops, when they actually sequenced the transgene in the crop, it was different in every case than what the company had registered with the European government.
You mean the gene moved from the original place they inserted it in?
Yes, and so that means that it's very likely that it's been scrambling itself, that it's unstable. We can't guarantee because they didn't follow up to see, you know, they didn't take a huge sample to see if there was different ones than each other, although a different European laboratory examined the same crops and in some cases found it had changed in a different way. So now you get these kind of Frankenstein foods which are producing proteins that have never existed naturally in these crops, and now these proteins may be different because it's being changed spontaneously, and so it's a kind of out-of-control situation.
And the proteins typically are what humans typically have allergic reactions to, and that's why the increase in allergens in the last, I don't know, 10 years or so.
Very, very possible. Like, for example, genetically engineered soy. Soon after it was introduced to the UK, soy allergies skyrocketed by 50%. They're one of the few countries that actually test food allergies each year. Now, if you look at genetically engineered soy, there's many reasons why it might be creating allergies. The gene that they put in there creates a protein that turns the soybean into an herbicide-tolerant crop. So you could spray the soy plant and not kill it. But the protein that does that has sections identical to known allergens that may be allergenic. Also, the process of inserting the gene causes massive damage in the DNA. It turns out it's produced a different protein, one that was never intended, which is also a potential allergen. In addition, a known allergen in soy called trypsin inhibitor is as much as 7 times higher in genetically engineered cook samples compared to non-GM soy. So there's a known allergen which increases. When they did a skin prick test on individuals, they found at least one person who was reacting only to the non-GM soy and not to the natural, only to the GM soy and not to the natural soy. So it indicates that this may be very, very dangerous to put in our food supply, causing allergic reactions. It might also increase allergic reactivity to other products. Like in the 5 years after genetically modified soy was introduced to the United States, peanut allergies doubled. There's a cross-reactivity between peanuts and soy, and this might have increased that reactivity, causing more and more people to have this very, near-death experience with peanuts.
Yeah. So soy is genetically modified. About, did you say 89% of the soy we eat is genetically modified?
89% of the soy that they grow is genetically modified.
Okay.
Now, it depends on what you eat, depending if the soy that you eat is genetically modified. For example, if you just buy some product off the shelf and it has soy lecithin or soy protein isolate or soybean oil or soy flour, and it doesn't say organic and it doesn't say non-GMO, it is almost certainly genetically engineered.
Okay.
It's made in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy soy milk and you read the label, it'll probably say organic or made with non-genetically engineered soy.
Okay. And you're saying that these genetically engineered soy typically produce, did you say, 7 times the amount of allergen than organic or natural soy?
Well, there's a known allergen in soy called trypsin inhibitor. And in raw soy samples, in Monsanto's own study, it was 27% higher. However, when they cooked the sample, some reason it didn't denature the trypsin inhibitor like it did in the natural soy. And so it was almost the same level. It was 7 times higher than a comparative sample of a non-GM soy, which means that normally in the cooking process of soy, you may take an allergen and make it inactive,
right,
or reduce the amount of it. However, in the genetically engineered soy, it appears that it may not be, the cooking may not do that, in which case it could be much more allergenic.
Okay. Jeffrey, also, one other perception that people have about genetically modified foods compared to the non-genetically modified is that they are nutritionally equal. Is that true?
Well, they only take samples of a very few nutrients.
Okay.
And they say, well, if it's within the same range, we'll just call it the same. However, For example, the soy, it has less protein in it compared to non-GM soy. It has less of an essential amino acid. It has 12 to 14% less phytoestrogens, which are supposedly cancer-fighting or heart disease-fighting. And so they're not necessarily the same. They might also have an increase in anti-nutrients. In fact, genetically engineered soy does have a dramatic increase in soy lectin, which is something that blocks the assimilation of other nutrients. And so, no, they're not the same. They could be very different. And they could also have all sorts of changes in the secondary metabolites, also known as natural compounds. There could be thousands of natural compounds that make certain plants unique. And those can be changed dramatically in genetically engineered plants. And those have a lot of health-bestowing benefits, or they could be toxic. So when there's changes there, we're really playing a genetic roulette with our health by eating these foods, even though they haven't actually been testing for these type of changes.
Jeffrey, in your book, Seeds of Deception, you talk about Roundup Ready soybeans. Could you explain that a little bit? And could you tell us about how much of the soybeans that are non-organic that we eat is coming from Roundup Ready?
Very good. Years ago, Monsanto found a bacteria growing in a dump site near their factory that was not dying in the presence of Roundup herbicide. Now, Roundup herbicide normally kills bacteria, but there was something in this bacteria that had mutated and was allowing it to survive what was normally a deadly dose of a deadly toxin. And so they said, let's put it in the food supply. So they took the gene from the bacteria which produced this protein, which made it invincible to Roundup herbicide, and they took that gene and they put it into soybeans. And so now the soybeans are Roundup ready, which means you could spray over the tops of the plants and kill all the other biodiversity in the field, but not the soybeans that are genetically engineered. And so what it does is it causes the farmers to spray a lot of Roundup.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this causes the weeds to become herbicide tolerant as well. And so initially there was a reduction in the use of the herbicide in the first 2 or 3 years in the United States, and then it's kind of leveled off, and now it's rapidly accelerating. In the first 9 years, there was about 138 million pound increase in herbicides due to these herbicide tolerant crops, but in the last 2 years, it was an additional 120 million pounds.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, between 2005 and 2006, there was a 38% increase in the use of Roundup, which is huge. It means that it's being flooded onto our food supply, onto our environment, and ultimately into our water table.
I've heard that there are some weeds that have now become resistant to Roundup.
Some very big and important weeds like pigweed, and that these are causing absolute huge problem with these farmers. And so the farmers are either having to take it out by hand, or they're resorting to really much more toxic herbicides like 2,4-D, which went up about 238% over the last 2 years, from 2004 to 2006. And that's because of the lack of effectiveness of Roundup because of these herbicide-tolerant crops.
So some of these soybeans may have a lot of Roundup residue on them that we may be eating.
Absolutely. In fact, overexposure to Roundups and to Roundup's active ingredient have a lot of problems, a lot of health problems associated with it. It's one of the highest reported incidences of farm-related accidents is exposure to this Roundup. And it's in much higher levels. In fact, Monsanto had to get an increase in allowable residues on foods in order to introduce these Roundup-ready crops. And so it might be contributing to some of the sicknesses associated with genetically engineered soy.
Jeffrey, would you tell us which chemical company created the Roundup Ready soy and which company makes Roundup?
Well, Monsanto does both. They have about the patent to about 90% of all genetically engineered crops that are in the ground.
Hmm.
And they were asked, by the way, by Arthur Andersen Consulting, which was their consulting company years ago, to describe their ideal future in 15 to 20 years. And they described a world in which 100% of all commercial seeds were genetically engineered and patented.
Hmm.
And so Andersen Consulting worked backwards from that goal to create the strategy and tactics to achieve it. And Monsanto went on a buying spree and is now the largest seed company in the world. And they are starting to withdraw the availability of non-GM seeds in certain areas of these 7 commercial genetically engineered food crops, where it's harder and harder for farmers to get the non-GM seeds that they need.
Corn is also a big genetically modified food. In your book, Seeds of Deception, you mentioned an incident with Starlink corn. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, there was a very stupid decision by the Environmental Protection Agency, which regulates these pesticide-producing crops. Now, the stupid decision for them was, they said, well, Starlink, the protein in Starlink seems to be too much like an allergen for a lot of reasons. And so we think it might be a problem if humans eat it, but it's okay if animals eat it. So we'll let it be planted in the United States, and we'll expect all the farmers to divert it for animal feed, and we're sure it'll stay out of the human food chain, which, of course, was completely false. And pretty soon it was contaminating the entire human food chain. Back in 2000, it was discovered, and there was about over 300 products subject to recall. It cost the company about $1 billion. It suppressed the prices of corn in the United States, caused a huge, huge hassle. Now, the FDA was unbelievably incompetent in their lack of follow-up on thousands of consumer complaints linked to supposed allergic reactions to this corn. And they, after it took them 9 months to develop a test to see if the corn was actually an allergen, and it was such a poorly constructed test that the science advisory panel, the leading allergists in the country, dismissed the conclusions entirely and said, yes, Starlink seems to have a medium likelihood of allergy, and said there's no level that we could consider safe in the human food supply. So that was a demonstration of the kind of problems that could occur with cross-pollination and accidental seed mixing and all sorts of ways that this self-generating genetic pollution, self-propagating, can spread into the environment, to the non-GM counterparts, and in some cases to weedy relatives. So the effects of genetically engineered crops can outlast the effects of global warming and nuclear waste.
That's scary.
Yes.
Jeffrey, would you tell us a little bit about the way genetically engineering has been used on the milk that we drink, or the cow's milk that we drink?
Yes, there's a Monsanto again. They took genes from a cow, and they put it into bacteria, and turned the bacteria into a living factory to produce this bovine growth hormone. They inject the bovine growth hormone, farmers do this, every couple of weeks to increase milk supply. And they, back a few years ago, it was estimated that 22% of all dairy cows in the United States were getting these injections. Well, it changes the milk. It changes it dramatically. Well, first of all, the cows have more infections of the udder, so they have more pus in the milk, but if it's too much pus, they can't sell it, and so they give the cows more antibiotics, which puts more antibiotics into the milk. There's also more bovine growth hormone in the milk. But the thing that's the most concerning is a hormone called IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1. Now, milk has IGF-1 in it normally. Milk drinkers increase their levels of IGF-1. High levels of IGF-1 are associated with cancer. Women, premenopausal women with high levels, are 7 times more likely to develop breast cancer. Men are 4 times more likely to develop prostate cancer. It's implicated in lung and colon cancer. And it's in much higher levels in the milk from cows treated with RBGH. Now, last year, another report came out that RGF-1 levels are also associated with high rates of fraternal twins. And maybe explain why the United States has higher levels of fraternal twins than the UK, because the UK, they don't allow the use of RBGH. They don't allow it in Canada. They don't allow it anywhere in the Europe. In fact, we're one of the only industrialized countries that allow it. Now, there's the whole story of RBGH has a long trail of whistleblowers and rigged research and whatnot. I talked to a scientist at the FDA. He was involved in evaluating it. He was trying to get some more studies done. He was fired. Six scientists in Canada, in the government there, testified that they were being pressured to approve it, that documents were stolen from a locked file cabinet, and Monsanto offered them a bribe of $1 to $2 million to approve it. Fox TV in Florida was going to blow the whistle on it, linking it to cancer in a 5-part news series, but a threatening letter from Monsanto's attorney promising dire consequences to Fox TV and its owner Rupert Murdoch ultimately canceled the series. Now, finally, after all these years in the market since about 1994, we have achieved sufficient consumer pushback, so it's a stampede of dairies and retail supermarket chains that are committing publicly to not use milk products from cows that are treated with RBGH. The most recent one was Kroger's, which was announced this last week, Publix, Starbucks, Safeway's processing plant in Oregon and Washington, Garlic's, a whole slew of dairies have stopped using it because there was a concerted effort to describe to consumers the health risks, and so using it became a liability. And here's where we see a complete perfect picture of what we need to do with genetically engineered crops. To educate people about the health risks in sufficient numbers so that its use becomes a liability, so that there will be a stampede of food companies that publicly commit to remove them. Now, that happened already in Europe, and the stampede took about 1 week from the very first company that said no more GMOs, that was Unilever. Within a week, virtually every major food manufacturer said the same thing. But that was back in April of 1999.
Okay.
That's because they knew about it. But the United States, as you pointed out, they don't know much about it.
Jeff, you're giving us a lot of information, and I know you have a lot more. But we're going to have to take a commercial break, and we'll come back. We'll talk more about what other people can do to help get genetically modified foods off the market. You're tuned in to Wellness in the New Millennium on K108. I'm Dr. Jason Uchida. Tonight, our topic is about the good, the bad, and the ugly with genetic engineering of our foods. Stay with us, and Jeffrey Smith and I will be right back with more about health and wellness and genetically engineered foods right after we take this very important sponsorship break with our friends from Nutrex Hawaii, Divina Natural Skin Care, the Tri-Element Supplement Company, the Good Health Food Store, and the Island Wellness Center. Welcome back. I'm Dr. Jason Uchida, and you're listening to Wellness in the New Millennium on K108. Tonight, Jeffrey Smith joins us. Jeffrey is an expert on the industry of genetic engineering of foods and the author of the international best-selling book, Seeds of Deception, Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of the Genetically Engineered Foods You're Eating. If you're interested in purchasing Seeds of Deception, you can buy it online at www.seedsofdeception.com. or call 641-472-8338. The cost is $17.95. I highly recommend that you purchase this book to learn about the tainted foods that you're eating right now, as well as learn about the way big chemical companies, the FDA, the federal government, and big pharmaceutical companies really conduct their business and how they really care about you. It is very eye-opening, to say the least. Again, the phone number to purchase the seed.
Actually, Jason, I'm going to give you a different phone number there.
Go ahead.
888-717-7000.
All right.
888-717-7000.
All right. Thank you, Jeffrey. If you have any questions to ask Jeffrey Smith about genetic engineering of foods, please call us at 524-1080. Jeffrey, why all the deceit and lies from the chemical giants and the FDA?
Well, because they don't have a science that really works. Most of the assumptions that were used to the basis of safety claims have been proven untrue. Their bid here is to basically take over the food supply by taking over the seed supply and patenting it. So there's millions and billions of dollars available. And the thing is, unfortunately, Monsanto, who's been leading the charge on this, has a very, very shady past. I mean, they came out with Agent Orange, and they came out with PCBs. They were fined $700 million for basically poisoning a town next to their PCB factory. They had documents show that they knew that they were causing this kind of problem, but went on with it for years and years. And they are the people in charge of the safety of our food. And so we have seen, I have to thank them for all the great material they provided me for my book. I tell you, them and the FDA, what a combination. But they have had incredible success in rigging research. I mean, I describe in my book how they meticulously work to organize their studies so that they avoid finding problems. They have bad science down to a science. Anyway, they are an amazing organization, and just spending some time either on my book or the internet just looking at what they've done is quite an eye-opener.
Yes, and all of your accusations are documented also. You have paperwork and legal documents that back what you say.
Oh, yeah. If I'm going to put out a book called Seeds of Deception, I have to make sure that I'm completely backed up. And also, since I'm going against a company which has had, you know, decades and decades of suing, I just read today that they're suing Novartis for $100 million.
Mm.
They sued a farmer, Percy Schmeisser, a friend of mine, in California, Canada. He had, there was a genetically engineered canola blew onto his land.
Mm.
And he just harvested it along with the rest of his and planted it the next year. That turned out to be illegal because Monsanto sued him, and now he was planting their patented genetically engineered seed, even though he never bought it, never used it as a herbicide-tolerant seed. He violated the law from doing what he'd been doing for years.
Mm-hmm. It just blew over into his field. And
right.
Jeffrey, we had a couple of calls at the break. Here's one of them. Does this hormone, I guess, meaning growth hormone, bovine growth hormone, used in cows, play a factor in the current trend of early puberty in American girls?
It's possible. I've talked to Sam Epstein about that, who's been an expert at this problems of genetically engineered bovine growth hormone. He thinks that the early sex production, sex development, is more likely to be the sexual hormones that are put into the meat using implants 50 or 100 days before butchering the animal. They put in these implants which produce sex hormones in the meat. He did write back in 1989 that it is possible that the growth hormone might cause the premature development of breasts in women, in young girls. But we haven't seen any research on that. The hardest evidence is the cancer.
Mm. Okay, Jeff, here's the other question. What other countries allow their people to consume genetically engineered foods, and why or why not?
Well, most countries, virtually all countries, allow people to consume it, but they give them a choice by mandatory labeling legislation. So in Europe, for example, it's allowed to be consumed. If it's in the product above a certain small percentage, it has to be labeled as such. But because of consumer resistance, virtually all the food manufacturers refuse to use genetically engineered ingredients because they don't want, because they've already committed to their consumers that they're not going to do it. There's a huge campaigns all over the world to create GM-free zones so that people don't plant it. There's 4,500 jurisdictions in Europe of small or medium size. There's whole countries in Europe that have moratorium or have refused to allow certain varieties to be planted. The states of Australia, sections of Brazil, Venezuela, Sudan, Angola, Zambia, again this week, refused again to allow genetically engineered crops or even food in their country. So, yes, it's allowed in most places, but it's resented and resisted well. And now we have enough evidence that we really should take it off the market. There's plenty of evidence, overwhelming evidence,
mm-hmm.
but there's also a multi-billion-dollar company that has been incredibly, incredibly successful in hijacking regulatory agencies and government officials.
And you're talking about Monsanto.
Monsanto, yes, and also some of the others, five other genetically engineered ag biotech company.
Mm. Jeffrey, here's a question that you kind of talked about before the break, but what can we do as a public to prevent further genetic engineering of our foods?
Well, I think that the consumer pushback, I think it'll be very easy to do that, actually.
Mm.
I think it's one of the most dangerous health and environmental problems and one of the easiest problems to fix. And I think that if we got about 5% of U.S. consumers rejecting brands because they contain GM ingredients, that's more than enough for these companies to switch to non-GM, because they don't gain anything from using GM. It doesn't taste better. It's not healthier. It doesn't have more vitamins. It doesn't have longer shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a matter of doing what several dozen other companies in the United States have already done by removing genetically engineered ingredients. They just tell their supply chain, no more GM soy, corn, cotton, or canola.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what I find is whenever I speak about the GM issue these days, within a half an hour or 45 minutes, virtually the entire audience is ready to change lifelong eating habits. I was speaking to several hundred medical doctors about 3 days ago, and I spoke only for 30 minutes. And at the beginning I said, okay, rate yourself from 1 to 100 how vigilant you were this week at avoiding bringing genetically engineered foods into your home. And I said, okay, 0 to 20, and most hands went up. 20 to 40, 40 to 60, etc. So most hands were 0 to 20. Then after 25 minutes, I said, and just giving information about the high offspring mortality, about potentially precancerous cell growth, smaller brains, livers, and testicles, damage to sperm cells, all these, you know, hard evidence showing real significant problems with genetically engineered foods, I said, rate yourself now how vigilant you'll be next month or next week. And virtually everyone was 80 to 100.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are medical doctors, and many of them came up to me afterwards and said, I had no idea anything about genetically engineered foods. Well, I find the same kind of response all over, wherever I speak, all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So if we just package this information, now, what can people do on a local level? I think the most sensitive area to get the word out most quickly will be associated with genetic GM-free schools, because it reaches to parents with young kids. And we have a whole GM-free school campaign. We have a video called Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals.
Mm.
It's on seedsofdeception.com. You can watch an excerpt from it. You show it, it's like instant activism. Immediately, a certain percentage of the community who watches it wants to participate. We give a 60-page manual on your own website, your own listserv. We're also working with the entire natural food industry to remove any remaining ingredients, genetically modified ingredients, from the natural food sector. We're going to set up GMO education centers in all the health food stores, a non-GMO shopping guide. We're working with religious organizations. We're working with healthcare professionals. But I think from a local grassroots, what can you do on the ground? I think the GM-free school campaign is the easiest. It's a proven strategy, and it works.
All right. Very good. Jeffrey, we have a couple of callers that called in. One is, would you please give your phone number again so that they can buy your book?
Okay. Now, this is for book orders only. It is 888-717-7000. You can buy books, DVDs, CDs, etc. That's 888-717-7000. Now, you can also go to seedsofdeception.com, and when you're there, you can listen or download an hour-long talk by me. You can watch excerpts of a video. There's a lot of information. You can sign up for a syndicated monthly column. It goes out free. You could post it on your website, send it around to your listserv, reprint it in any magazine. It's used in many magazines all over the world. And we try and get the information out in any way we can. And I should also say that one of the most compelling pieces of information that people find from Seeds of Deception is the fact that when given a choice, animals in many species avoid eating GM foods.
Mm-hmm.
That's pigs, cows, geese, elk, deer, raccoons, squirrels, mice, and rats all avoid eating it when given a choice. So we have to take the wisdom of the animals, take a lesson from them.
They just know instinctively not to eat those foods because they're not healthy for some odd reason.
For some reason, exactly.
All right. Jeffrey Smith, the author of the book Seeds of Deception as well as Genetic Roulette. Jeffrey, we have about 1 minute left. The other question is, what are the potential catastrophes that await genetic engineering of foods on humankind?
Well, you know, if you eat a genetically engineered corn chip, it could literally turn your intestinal flora into living pesticide factories, possibly for the rest of your life. That's because corn is genetically engineered to produce a pesticide, and the genes can transfer from genetically modified food to the DNA of our own gut bacteria. So it's possible that we have already colonized the gut bacteria of the U.S. population, which is causing long-term eroding of health. In fact, if you look at any of the worsening health statistics in the last 10 years, from autism to allergies to migraines, any of those might be related to the introduction of genetically modified foods because they're so unpredictable, and you're making fundamental changes with infant science to these crops and then feeding them to millions of people. So the potential problem is just, it's hard to imagine how bad it could be, but it's also quick. It's urgent that we could quickly remove these from the market and certainly protect ourselves and our families. And if you go to seedsofdeception.com, it explains more detail how to avoid eating genetically engineered foods.
Jeffrey, as a naturopath, we're on the front lines. Most of our treatment focuses on fixing, let's say, the digestive tract because of all these problems that we're seeing. Jeffrey, I'm sorry to say our time is up. I want to thank you so much for sharing your expertise on the subject of the real dangers of genetically engineered foods.
Well, I'm happy to finally connect with you. It's been several months, and it's been great.
All right, Jeffrey. That was Jeffrey Smith, expert on the industry of genetic engineering of foods and the author of the international best-selling book Seeds of Deception, as well as Genetic Roulette. You can buy Jeffrey Smith's book at www.seedsofdeception.com. I highly recommend you purchase his book.